Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Telling Everybody Everything. Here's how taking jobs in the entertainment industry works if you are Shay, TV's Catherine Ryan. My agent, Kitty Lang, she'll send me an email and it'll say, Catherine, are you interested in X job? And there's no mention of money in that email. Usually, there's no mention of dates. Now, Kitty and I have been together for as long as Violet's been alive. We've had many conversations. And lately, I've said, put the money in the first email, which Kitty is only too happy to do. But, you know, I would love to say that I choose projects based on just passion and what I naturally gravitate towards. But at the end of the day, if I get a job offer for a rat shit hauling company for £3 million, I will do it. That's not to say I will do everything. I used to do everything because, and I mean, I still naturally lend myself to go in that direction because I'm freelance and because I feel very grateful to get to work in the industry that I love. I am curious and interested in loads of projects. It isn't about the money, but I do love money. Sometimes I see a sign when I'm driving along the road and it'll say part-time wait staff needed. And I think to myself, I could do that. But again, I love to be a waitress. So lately I have been trying to take projects based on what I want to do. And last week I did not produce a podcast because I was very busy with a show that's not yet been announced, but it looked like loads of fun. It was less money than I was used to, but I wanted to do it and I'm glad I did it. It was big time bants and lulls and whatever you call it in this country. I had so much fun with the people, but I didn't know when I signed up to it necessarily what the time commitment was going to be. So first you talk about the job, then you talk about money and dates. But even when you talk about dates, you don't know about time commitment. And for a lot of jobs, you get picked up at midday or it films at night in the evening because it's comedy. But this job was picking us up at like 5:30 a.m. some days and not bringing us home till 8 p.m. I didn't find that out till almost the very end. And in my family, that means that I won't see the children awake. Fenna is an early riser. I saw her awake a lot of the time, but I didn't get to do bedtime bath time and I was gone for the whole day. And that's unusual for me, especially so many days in a row. I think it took about 2 weeks total. And it was really fun. And like I said, I'm glad I did it. I'm really proud of it. I got to meet some great people and got to know some people better that I didn't know before. But man alive, I just couldn't squeeze in the podcast. So I apologize for that. But what a week. Kate Middleton's terrifying, harrowing announcement. I actually watched it on set for this project I was doing. I received a few texts from showbiz people at 5:45. There were a lot of people in the industry who knew that she was going to be making this announcement, but it was embargoed. And that's because we have overlapping friendships with media and people in journalism and people on TV and comedians and actors and whatever. We've just gotten to know each other over the years. So at 5:45 p.m., a few of us started getting texts. And then at 6 p.m., the video was on the 6 o'clock news of Kate making her really sad announcement that she had the surgery. They didn't expect to find what they found was malignant cells. I guess she didn't go into too many details, but basically she then is going to have to face this disease. It sounded like it was all gone, but they were doing preventative chemo. Again, like, I'm not familiar with preventative chemo, but maybe if you want to be super sure that you got all the cells and all the cells around what was removed. I mean, my God. Basically, what we know is 40 is no age to be getting cancer, and it happens to many young mothers that I've known in my life. It's always good to be your own advocate for your health. I've had horrible stories amongst friends of pains that went undetected and ignored. Maybe you didn't go to an appointment. I would assume that Kate Middleton has the best healthcare of anyone in the world. And so it is a wake-up call for people who are in the general queue for healthcare, that if you have something that you think might be wrong, or sometimes even a pregnancy can mask symptoms, or sometimes when you've just had a baby, you go in with symptoms and they go, no, those aren't symptoms, you've just had a baby. So if it can happen to someone at that level of healthcare, in that position, then it can happen to anyone. So please be vigilant, please be your own advocate. And it's very sad, and it goes without saying that we wish her the best. And I'm really glad that I wasn't one of those people who pontificated about her whereabouts or made fun of the photoshopping. I said, you know, she deserves privacy like anyone else. Catherine Ryan, always on the right side of wrong. However, that's not to say that people aren't being gaslit. It's like, oh, this announcement has definitely halted any speculation. But I don't think that people should be vilified and shamed for having guessed about where she might be, who might have been worried, who might have been saying, well, what are you not telling us? Because there was something that you were not telling us. And there are probably other things going on. Like, the photoshopping still doesn't make sense. Yeah, like, okay, it makes more sense that, oh, I was just messing around with Photoshop, like a lot of moms do. But it's not like, how dare you have noticed the photoshopping? She has cancer. It's like, all right, that's separate. The photoshopping still was weird. And the rumors about the relationship, that those don't go away just because there's this other thing, the diagnosis that people are feeling really badly about. If there's spooky instincts and people thought that it was appropriate to go, where is this woman? Then I think they had their best intentions forward. And, you know, don't feel too bad about yourself if you were like, it's weird to Photoshop a photo. Yeah, it is on Mother's Day. And if you believed any of the rumors about the marriage, like there are a lot of things going on in a lot of marriage. Life is not linear and there are layered issues. You might be in a marriage, a normal marriage, with your own things going on and complexities, and then someone gets very sick in that marriage. That doesn't make all the other stuff not true. Over here on Telling Everybody Everything, we knew that there had not been a facelift. We knew that there had not been a BBL. So of course I wish her the best and a very swift recovery, but plastic surgery is just not a royal's thing to do. Like, maybe they dabble in Botox and fillers, but you are not going to get away with a BBL when you're Kate Middleton. It's just not going to happen. So yeah, people will come up with rumors if you are a very public figure who disappears for a while. And I don't think that that makes you bad. In bad news, Quiet on Set, a damning new docuseries, has hit the airwaves about the radioactive working environment and multiple unsavory characters behind the scenes of American kids' TV behemoth Nickelodeon, spanning the mid-1990s well into the 2000s. This documentary is called Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, and it's available to stream here in the UK from Monday, March 25th on Discovery Plus, so you can watch it now. And it's not for the faint of heart. It mainly centers around creative powerhouse and all-around creep Dan Schneider, who's responsible for creating iconic millennial and Gen Z touchstones like All That, The Amanda Show, that's Amanda Bynes, Drake and Josh, iCarly, and Victorious, while launching the careers of preteen superstars Drake Bell, Miranda Cosgrove, Jeanette McCurdy, and Ariana Grande. Beyond the three convicted sexual predators profiled who were lurking around set, the docuseries highlights the hypersexualized coded content that was allowed on air without issue. Phallic symbols abound, along with kids being routinely squirted in the face with viscous liquids, too many close-ups of feet, and a particularly troubling scene in which a young Ariana Grande is trying to extract juice from a potato, all of which are apparently still included in the anthology, which is currently enjoying a second life of popularity on Netflix. So do or don't check that out, but what the fuck? I hate to say it, but my first red flag that you might be a pedo is that you want to work with and around kids. Nobody wants to work around kids. Why would you want to do that to yourself? I love my own kids. I don't want to spend my career and entire working day around kids. We had a musical theater director when I was growing up who was a prolific pedo, and he preyed upon vulnerable boys, boys with disabilities. He was a very bad man. He was also the town Easter bunny. Gymnastics coaches have had this documentary about their involvement. That's not to say, obviously, all kids television producers, all gymnastics coaches, certainly not. But I think we need a better vetting system for these people. And it goes without saying, where are the parents? Like, if you have a small child that you are setting loose into an environment of like professional TV, athletics, musical theater, whatever, like there's still a child you need to be around. You need to treat your child like the vulnerable person that they are, like a rabbit in a field of foxes. And they might be okay, but like they'll definitely be okay if you are by their side. And the proof is in all these adult child stars now who are unwell. Like, what happened to Britney Spears? What happened? What happened to Amanda Bynes? Like, some people are able to, I don't know, through sheer chance, like navigate these environments and come out unscathed. Like, it seems Ariana Grande's fine. Is she fine because her family were ever present in her life? Her brother was around, presumably her mother was around, and maybe nothing happened to Amanda Bynes and she just was predisposed to mental health issues. But if you didn't see what happened to Amanda Bynes, there's a TikTok rabbit hole waiting for you. The convicted pedophiles notwithstanding, a lot of the behavior that's detailed in this docuseries and discussed with shock and awe under the lens of 2024 would have simply been considered inappropriate at the best of times pre-2017, before the Me Too movement interrupted the permission structure of the quote-unquote tortured male genius being coddled. Since the docuseries aired, a number of parents have come to Dan Schneider's defense, saying that the parents were omnipresent on set and knew exactly what was going on, yet chose to say nothing. So where's the line between intervening as a parent and being agreeable and not sabotaging your child's acting career? Well, maybe your child should not have an acting career, just like your child should not have a business as a plumber or a trade in carpentry, because it's dangerous for your child to be using an electric saw all day, and they should be in school and they're a child. Ugh, it's so tricky because I've worked with children, not very often, but in The Duchess, of course, we had a lovely young woman who portrayed the little girl, and she was older than she looked, which is always a plus when you're a child actor because you're that much more mature and you can do a few more hours. But she was protected. She was so protected. She had advocates. Her mother was on set all the time. We had wonderful child handlers. But again, like, that's a 2024 thing. And I don't know exactly what was going on in 2016, early 2000s, 90s. Take it back to Shirley Temple era and Judy Garland. They were owned by the studio and practically fed coffee and cigarettes. So we've got better. But what happened to the casualties along the way? I don't think that I'm going to be able to watch this documentary. I've read loads about it. Little bits are popping up on social media, but I feel like it's just going to make me too sick. And I work hard so that my kids don't have to work. My kids were loosely featured, lightly featured in parental guidance, but they're not the stars of that show, and I'm with them all the time. Violet demonstrated, I mean, a real natural quality for being on camera. That's because she doesn't want to be on camera. She wasn't starstruck. We aren't like chasing anything for her. So I wouldn't be making any compromises to her health and safety. She just happened to be really funny and give some extreme teenager side eye now and then. I don't know what I would do if she wanted to go into that business. If Violet said to me, I love musical theater. I love it. And I want to audition to be in the West End. And that means you're going to drop me at the stage door at noon and you're going to pick me up, hopefully in the same state you dropped me off in 3 hours later. And there's going to be a child handler and there are going to be five costume changes. Even in 2024, even with Violet nearly being 15, I don't know that I would love it. But it would be hard to say no if she was super, super invested and talented. Let's say Violet was a young model. And this is how a lot of those girls came to harm, is that modeling age is pedophilically like 13, 14, 15. It starts then. You look in the runways, these are very young teenage girls. I don't know how old they are when they hit the runway, like 16, 17, doing campaigns, flying to New York, going all over the world without you? No. My good friend Michelle DeSwart has material. You will know her from her HBO show, The Baby. She's got a brand new show that she wrote called Spent, coming out on BBC. She was in The Duchess. She's an incredible stand-up. She's got a little bit of material about Jeffrey Epstein and going to his house, if you haven't seen it. And luckily, she was from ENDS. And she was 18 years old or 19 years old. And she wasn't naive. She could look out for herself. But my God. What do you think? On the subject of Jeffrey Epstein, there's now a hip-hop alleged ring of blackmail and coercion and videotapes. We all saw the huge news that P. Diddy, formerly known as Puff Daddy, formerly known as Sean Combs, homes are being raided by the FBI, and that doesn't happen without just cause. We saw images of his children, his adult son, in handcuffs, and Puff Daddy pacing around, I think it was a Miami airport, before he disappeared in a private plane. And now, with technology, we have TikTok plane trackers who were tracking Taylor Swift and saying, well, will she be able to appear at this football game? Where is she now? And Taylor Swift's team had to be like, please don't do that. It's an invasion of privacy. But these trackers have come in handy because I think they picked up Puff Daddy, P. Diddy's private plane going to Antigua or somewhere. He is no longer in the United States. He is somewhere where they do not have an extradition agreement with the USA. If whatever's happening, if the prosecution decide to press actual charges, they won't be able to get him back from where he is unless he willingly decides to go. Cassie has made allegations about him. There are loads of allegations that there's like a ring of hip-hop artists. And I mean, I don't know what's going on. And I certainly don't want to be dragged into any legal trouble about what's going on. But it seems very dark. He had cameras set up, allegedly. I mean, he was friends with R. Kelly and Jay-Z. Is it possible that Jay-Z is just like a good guy who fell in with the wrong crowd? Or was Jay-Z dating Foxy Brown when she was 15, 16? I don't know. Was Jay-Z 30 when he went public with his relationship to Beyonce when she was 19? I don't know. I forget. Oh my gosh, did you see my episode of Drag Race where I was a guest judge? I felt both honored and extremely shaded by Drag Race UK, by RuPaul, by the gay community as a whole, because I am the obvious choice for guest judge. And what are we, season 42 of fucking Drag Race before I get asked? I was watching other guest judges. I was thinking, what have I done? What have I done to not be included in this? Because I know that I would slay it. And slay it I did, if I don't say so myself. I very rarely toot my own horn, but I did have help. My good friend, podcast collaborator, producer, comedian Andrew Johnston did send me some runway ideas. We worked on it together, but I came up with some of them on the spot when I saw the queens in their outfits. And I love to credit when I have writing help. I have no problem doing that at all. It takes a village, and I wasn't going to show up and just wing it. All right? I had something to prove. I only wish that we could get a reel of the outtakes because they included a few of the things I said, but I was just genuinely sat there saying like 50 things. And I think that's why Rue was laughing more at the fact that I just wouldn't stop than what I actually said. But it was just a dream come true. I'm such a fan, and my outfits were amazing. My stylist, Jennifer Mahalski Bryce, sourced those. You can see on my Instagram, I've tagged the place that did the amazing latex and the amazing wings. My wonderful makeup artist, Fiona Eustace, did my makeup, and I loved it. I loved it. Although, when Scarlet Envy came out in an Elvis-inspired bridal gown, and the theme was bridal, I should have said, and I couldn't get the words out, I never said it, and I don't know if it would have been included in the broadcast anyway, but my one regret is that I didn't say, because she looked very Vegas as Elvis, come get married at the Little White Chaps Hole, or something with chaps, Little White Chaps Hole. I was thinking Little White Chapel, Little White Chaps Hole. And in my line of work, when you make a mistake like that, it's a terrible phrase to be rolling around in your head. You know, if you work in finance, you might make a mistake and you're thinking at night, oh, I should have sold high and bought low. I should have done this in the stock exchange. I don't know what you think. But I'm now going to be laying in bed for many nights in a row with the words, Little White Chaps Hole. You should have said Little White. How would you have said it? Like, join our nuptials at the Little White Chaps Hole. Or, oh, looks like she got married at the Little White Chaps Hole. Or, we've got a booking for two at the Little White Chaps Hole. Can you fit me in at the Little White Chaps Hole? Probably that one. This is how comedy works. Or, in other words, doesn't work. If you don't mind, I'm going to give you a rundown of some of the things that I'm doing, because I'm being asked to provide like videos to my tour promoters and different things, and I never have makeup on. Oh God, I gotta send a video to Joel Dommett's friend as well. Joel, I know you don't listen to this podcast. Can someone, if you see Joel, tell him I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it. I just need to have makeup on where I'm not being rushed off to film something else. And in my real life, that doesn't happen. So I am on tour with my brand new show, Battle Axe, from the autumn, and that's going to be a European and UK tour. I have a few dates elsewhere as well. You can buy tickets for that now if you'd like to come. Tickets are moving quickly. I'm not even lying. You know that I tell you, like, oh, hurry, the last few remaining is always a lie. It means the thing is selling like shit. But my things are genuinely selling well. Okay, so I'm in Dubai, April 12th at the Dubai Comedy Festival. It's Dubai Opera. Or Dubai Opera House, I think. And you can find tickets to that online if you go and look. I am in Los Angeles at the Netflix Festival with my show on Friday, May 10th at the Montalban Theater. I don't know what language Montalban is. It has a funny accent on the A, and it doesn't look French. I am doing a podcast festival, the Crossed Wires Podcast Festival in Sheffield in the Oval Room. That is Sunday, June 2nd. So Sheffield, it's a whole different thing from stand-up comedy, but if you want to see me and you don't want to wait for the tour, June 2nd, I will be in Sheffield at the Crossed Wires Podcast Festival at 8:30 p.m. with my good friend Emily Dean. So look for Crossed Wires Podcast Festival. I'm sure a lot of your faves will be there. And I've done a live podcast only once. I did it right when lockdown lifted. It was my grand announcement of my pregnancy with Fred, like I was hiding it well anyway. I was probably 39 weeks pregnant. It was something ridiculous. And it was a lot of fun. It was in Kentish Town. It was quite small. It was just trying it out. And my podcast is different from many. It's just me talking to you about my life a lot of the time. I've started incorporating pop culture stuff, news stuff. Thanks to Andrew, he keeps me abreast of what's going on because I know people are tired of hearing about my kids because I'm tired of hearing about my kids. I love them dearly, and we're having a great Easter party this Sunday, just a really small gathering of friends. Like I said, I have no aspirations to be a gymnastics coach. I don't like to be around a lot of kids. Having said that, the kids have a really cool gymnastics coach. So I really hope I haven't offended every single person who works with children. I'm just saying it's one red flag. And I am all ready for this Easter egg hunt. It's going to be amazing. We have a real bunny coming. And I've done this a few years with Violet where I have just hired bunnies in and we look after them. You know, don't write me any vegan emails. The health and safety of the bunnies is paramount. And you just pay the full sale price, like what the bunny costs. And a breeder that has like seven or eight bunnies that they can't shift is really happy to collect the full cost of the bunnies and bring them over for a couple of hours to be handled by very gentle 7 or 8 year old young ladies, as we have done in the past, and then take them back. This time we have but one special bunny coming to make a little appearance with the children, and I know that they'll be happy. I think Fred understands what Easter is. He's been making some incredible artwork at home and at school. Well, school, he goes to nursery 2 mornings a week, the most wonderful nursery in the world. And this is it. I can't tell you all the details of my life. Like, I think Violet is entitled to loads of privacy at her age. Fred and Fenna, I'm going to have to pull back from social media soon because they're really starting to get in their own personalities. And I do think children should be able to grow up with anonymity and privacy. But I wish I could tell you about Fred's nursery because it is just the greatest nursery in the world. And last week was a busy one, but it was great. I did a corporate gig in the evening. So after my long days of filming, which were like 12-hour days minimum, I realized in my calendar that I had a few engagements in the evening. And some of those were social engagements with Bobby, and I had put these in before I agreed to do the show. And I wanted to keep those because you do have to balance everything. And we had an opportunity to go out and have dinner and drinks with some neighbors that we've really been trying to meet up with. And we've been saying, like, how long have we lived in this house? Maybe 5 years. We've been like, yes, we should have dinner and drinks. Of course, we should have. But everybody has small children and everybody has busy jobs. So this was one that I was not going to miss. And I was so glad that I went. It was totally transformative. It was not at all like a red carpet. Bobby and I keep trying to parlay work into social life, and it's not the same. So this was just a local pub. It was so much fun. And I was invited to do a corporate gig, which is where a company will have an awards and a comedian, usually, or sometimes a presenter or public figure, or sometimes like SAS person or like inspirational Olympian. You never know, but I always recommend getting a comedian because we kill it. We're invited to present the awards, and I wanted to do this awards because it's a really cool company called Actum. They're a financial tech company. I think I don't really feel like I'm smart enough to understand what these companies are. The most that I can understand anytime I do this value creation, innovation, financial tech sort of sector is that private equity is like different from other money or places of investment. And there are people employed by these companies to write really clever algorithms. And then it becomes the algorithm, not the person who advises on where money should be invested short term and move, I think, on like a non-biased perspective. Quant, is that what it's called? I don't know. But I can tell you this. I do awards for loads of companies, and I absolutely loved Actum. I loved the event. It was at the Natural History Museum. I loved the vibe. I loved all the companies in the room, all the investors, all the advisors, all the people that they were honoring, all their clients, whomever these people were. I loved them. I loved the CEO. I loved the director. I thought everyone there just had such a lovely energy. And so if I was looking for work in this sector, or if I was looking to invest or looking for guidance in terms of private equity and value creation, which again is only what I think it does. I will never understand. Holy shit. The children are knocking at the podcast studio. Bobby was like, you go out there and finish your podcast, because he did a workout today. And he said, I'll go inside and look after the children. And here they are. This is not being inside looking after the children. Fred has not been well. He 100% needs adenoids out or tonsils out. So I spoke about this on another podcast, and a lot of people messaged me to give options of what you can do and not take tonsils out. And the biggest surprise, there were a few surprises. So number one, when our parents got their tonsils out, they were cut out. And when we got our tonsils out, they were heated out, sort of like a cauterized out with hot. And kids now who get their tonsils and adenoids out, it's cold, so they somehow freeze them out. Hi, Freddo. Oh, hello, mister. What are you doing in here? How was your day today?
I go that way.
You can go that way, or you can talk in the microphone first and hear your voice. Don't you like to do that?
Yeah.
Maybe you'd like to sing one of your songs.
I'm still alive.
Do you want to listen to it?
Let's sprint back here.
No, yeah.
So that was terrible. Anyway, another thing you can do is just reduce the tonsils so you don't take them all the way out. So you still have the organ, as it does provide some immune function, but you just reduce it. And Fred's tonsils right now, I mean, man alive. I took him to a specialist, and I liked that the specialist was very conservative. He was like, well, he wasn't conservative. He probably was also conservative. You never know. But he was like, look, he doesn't need them out now. We'll keep an eye on him. We'll see him again in 3 months. There are children who need them out. And these are children who just have so many infections and have sleep apnea, and it's really affecting them. So we're just going to keep an eye on him. But for now, let's listen to these messages from our sponsors. And when we return, I will answer your letters, your dilemmas, your questions, and your comments for other listeners that you have been sending in over the last 2 weeks. So they should be good ones.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh no, I've angered an Irish person. Perhaps this is why I wasn't allowed on Drag Race for so long. Or maybe it's because I'm doing a show in Dubai. Catherine, stop calling the Irish inbred. Your Irish roots are not inferior to anyone, and we Irish do not deserve to be talked of dismissively as inbred. Having Irish heritage does not give you the right to demean Irish people in this way. I mean, Irish or whatever, I am severely inbred in that I have no heritage from anywhere else at all. And I think that all my ancestors were genetically very, very closely related or at least similar. I don't feel like that is a dismissal or an attack on any ethnicity, certainly not my own, but I feel like, first of all, I've learned from this podcast that I say I feel like entirely too much, and I'm going to try to cut back. It's the new like, is I feel like. But I think that with dogs, the breed is stronger if it has mixed heritage. And I think with people, you are stronger when you have mixed heritage. I think it's lovely to be Irish, but you can't deny that if you don't have some mixed heritage, then you have a lot of celiac disease, you have a complete sensitivity to sunlight, and probably other things. Like, I just think that I would be genetically stronger if I had some mix of something. I suppose to know this, you have to have the context that, like, I am entirely ethnically DNA Irish. Like, there's never ever anything else. And all I'm trying to say is that I would like some. So yeah, apologies to the Irish, but you know, there are worse things going on than me calling myself inbred. Catherine, work it out after cheating. In November last year, I found out my husband cheated on me. Since then, it's been a roller coaster of emotions. He asked me to move out, which I did, but under the impression we would figure things out, and he just wanted space. I found out he had continued seeing her, lied about it, and made me feel crazy for questioning him about it. In his head, we were separated. In my head, I was waiting for answers as to what was going on. It's truly been the craziest time. She fell pregnant and aborted the baby. He tried to take his own life. I ended up caring for his son, my stepson, for a couple months. We'd still been talking and sleeping together occasionally, and towards the end of February, he came to me and said he wants to make it work, and he's ended it with her, and he blocked and deleted her. That alone requires some unpacking. Like, what a whirlwind for everyone. And you haven't even got to, like, the crux of your letter. I feel like packing myself a lunch. This is going to be a long... Okay, so this is your husband. He's not just a boyfriend, but he has lived a life. We've all lived lives. He has a son from a previous relationship. That is your stepson. I would question, like, the first red flag is, how did that relationship end? Did he cheat on that woman with you? Would you know if he did? Now let's start with this paragraph. So you guys have split up. He made you feel crazy. He lied about seeing her. In a way, when there are breakups, I understand why people lie and why they deny and why they gaslight, because it would be really difficult to sit you down and be like, I want you to move out because the woman I'm cheating on you with is a woman I'm in love with and she's pregnant. Like, I mean, I think I would be too cowardly to have that conversation. I hope I wouldn't, but I think if I'm honest with myself, it would be really tough to look Bobby in the face and be like, I do not love you. I asked you to move out and I made you think we were going to get back together just so that you would agree to move out. But ultimately, I don't want to get back with you because I love this other man and I'm having a baby with him. Like, that's really hard to do. And I think that's why people gaslight. They go, no, because they're like panicking and they just want to do what they want and they're not really sure if that's the right thing. So they don't want to commit to that thing forever by telling you the truth, and they're just trying to get away with as much as they can. And the sad part is, ultimately, if he was a really good person, he owes you the truth. But officially, on paper, he doesn't, because you're broken up. And that is tough for me to tell you, but it seems to me like if he asked you to move out, then he didn't want to be with you anymore. And you were under the impression that you were working things out, but he used that to make sure that you would go and, like, be nice. He wanted to contain your reaction for as long as he could because he was feeling cowardly about what that reaction might be. So that's a crazy time. So then who knows what happened with them? They decided not to keep the baby that they were pregnant with. Then he tried to take his own life and you had his son for 2 months. What toll is that taking on his son? That, okay, I am at a place of mental health where I've delegated care of my son to someone else. That's really good. But this someone else is someone that I've broken up with and I don't want to be in a relationship. And I'm not really thinking about my son and how attached he's going to become to this woman. And then I'm going to ultimately move on. Like, what happened there? He seems okay. And I know people do strange things when they're feeling mentally unwell, but, like, he's not really putting his son first. Using you as a temporary babysitter, even though at this point he doesn't want to be with you. But fine. So you're still talking and sleeping together occasionally, which you shouldn't have done. And I know how easy that is too. But if someone walks out of your life, you let them go. And if someone asks you to move out, you do not keep fucking them, especially when they've cheated on you and got another woman pregnant. And if he's having you look after his stepson, okay, that is a charitable thing that you've done. But you need to have a word with your vagina and be like, we are helping this man out because we don't want to see the stepson come to any harm, but we are not fucking his dad. All right, so now the end of February, it's only the end of March now, so this is recent. He came to you and he says he wants to make it work. He's ended it with her, blocked her, and deleted her. Who fucking knows if that's true? Because this man is a liar. He's lied to you. Has she blocked and deleted him? She ultimately is the one who chose to have an abortion. It's her body, her choice. Hashtag women's rights. I think maybe she didn't want to be with him. I hate that you're entertaining getting back with this guy anyway, but if it's really what you want, I would get the story from her. And here's a little hack. If they happen to be in the same room, which hopefully they aren't, if they're blocked and deleted, but if you're ever trying to get the truth out of someone and you want to ask their friend, so for example, if two guys have been out on the lash or whatever, and you think something wrong has happened and one of them is your boyfriend, if he's like, no, ask my friend, I swear. When you ask the friend, don't look at the friend. Look at your boyfriend directly in the eyes while you ask the friend over your shoulder. Don't look at the friend, because what you want to see is what the boyfriend's face does when the friend is answering the question, and you want to make sure your boyfriend's not like making any gestures at the friend to help him along the way. That is a little side tip. Ugh. Okay. You decided to give him a chance. I decided to give him a chance. We have been together 10 years and married for 1 year, and it just didn't feel right to give up yet. Fast forward a couple... Oh, no. This was only the end of Feb, babe. Fast forward a couple weeks, and I find out he has reached out to her again. I was checking his phone. I saw her number was no longer blocked, and after a huge argument where he swore he had no idea why it was no longer blocked, I eventually found their conversation on his phone. Once again, he made me feel crazy for having suspicions. He's asked for another chance, and I promised him this, but how the hell do I believe him? Every ounce of me says to leave, but for some reason I can't. I know what you mean. And when you're in a marriage, and if you've been with this guy 10 years, then you are very attached to your stepson as well. He's just stayed with you exclusively for 2 months. It's so tricky in a marriage, isn't it? Because it's not as easy to walk away. And even if logically you know you're being mistreated, when you're in love with someone, you're in love with someone. And there are countless examples of couples who've been together for 40 years, 50 years. And the man, because he's an old man and probably a wrongin', as many men were back then, he did something awful. And the woman's like, yeah. And he truly was sorry, and our marriage got better after the fact. I don't think that I could be that woman. I don't think that I could be like, well, thank goodness he fucked his secretary, because it really made me look at our relationship and he started treating me better after that. I'd be like, who the fuck do you think you're married to? Like, I would like to think that I would behave that way. But in real life, who knows if I would? And let's say you take someone back who disrespects you in the worst way, does some of your own self-respect go along with it? I don't know. I don't know what you should do. I don't believe this guy. This guy feels like a liability to me. I'm sorry that he has mental health problems. I'm sorry that he tried to kill himself. I'm sorry that he got another woman pregnant and then they decided that that wasn't going to go forward. But all of this seems beneath you. And I've only known you for one email. But I think that your instincts are holding on to balance. Better the devil you know. You're like, okay, he's done this horrible thing, but I love him and it's the life that I know. You had one foot out the door. You had both feet out the door. You were kicked out. And I think that's the hardest part is already behind you. I don't think you should give this guy a chance, because if you do, I was going to say it'll only last 18 months before he fucks up again, but he fucked up again in within 5 weeks. So if he really wants to be with you, and this is going to be hard, and I don't know if I could do it myself, but I would say to him, I'm going to stay moved out, and your stepson can have as much access to me as he wants. Presumably he's at least 10 or 11, so he can text you himself. You don't really have to communicate with this husband much. I would say, I'm not going to divorce you just yet. We'll separate for 1 year. If after 1 year, you have sorted your mental health crisis out, you have not had any other relationships, you have been consistent, you have been respectful, you have put in the work that I deserve, the minimum work that it takes to win me back, win back the life that you have lost. If you can stay consistent and impress me, and if I still feel like getting back together with you after 1 year, then I will. And you might be thinking, oh, well, he'll move on. Well, then you never should have given him another chance to begin with. You might not like it, but that's my answer. Catherine, my veneer story. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I thought it was humorous that this week you brought up the topic of getting teeth put back in out. A few years ago, I was working as a groom in a beautiful dressage facility. One day I was, oh no, a horse kicked your teeth out. I was caught suddenly between the horse and the fence, and he just managed to nick my lower jaw. Thankfully, it wasn't full force. Fast forward to an hour later, the ambulance arrived. They had no idea what to do with the teeth. None. It was almost comical to see them shrugging and whispering, completely at a loss. We made our way to the hospital with the teeth and some saline, and they were later surgically reinserted after being thoroughly cleaned. I did have to get a lot of reconstructive surgery, but I'm now the proud owner of stunning veneers. That being said, When I retell these drastic accounts, which I found I had to do quite often, as you really can't hide a facial injury, I was absolutely shocked that literally everybody I spoke to questioned why the teeth were not put in milk. Apparently, it's just common knowledge, though somehow I had no idea, nor did the Embos. Oh my God, Britain. I love that the British term for ambulance drivers, aka paramedics, is Ambos. It seems like milk propaganda is global, and I can confirm that with amazing emergency surgery, teeth can be saved and put back in, though it is a long haul to get them looking as stunning as they once were. In short, I love to find the bright side of everything, and now I know, like really know, that my husband loves me a lot because I was a rough-looking girlfriend, but he saw what a baddie I'd become, and he was right. Great. Catherine, I know something about my son's new teacher. Whoa. What? So much gossip on this week's podcast. I mean, you don't disappoint. If you ever want to write me an email, by the way, it's tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. I like to throw this in different parts of the podcast, keep people on their toes. I don't always leave it till the end. Catherine, it goes without saying I love everything you do, and I already have my tickets to see you in February for my birthday. I need your help with something. A friend of my partner died by taking his own life toward the end of last year in his early 30s. I didn't know him well, but the funeral was the saddest thing I've ever been to, including the funeral of my own father, who also took his own life when I was in my 20s. Hundreds of people attended, and members of his family gave readings. One of those who gave a very moving and beautiful eulogy was his younger sister. I was so moved by her and her wonderful words. Oh, I've since found out that she will be my son's teacher next year. Oh, this is the thing you know about your son's teacher. I thought it was going to be something spicy, like hopefully a BDSM OnlyFans, but you know a very sad story about her. My question is, do I mention to her that I knew her brother? I feel I want to say how moved by her speech I was, how I didn't know him well, but I think of him every day as I really did like him, and I'm so sad he's gone. I'm sad for her, and I'm sad for her family, but she's at work. Does she really want this brought up? Probably not. Would it then be awkward between us for the whole year? But if I don't say anything, what if she recognizes me from the funeral and thinks it's weird I didn't say anything? In all honesty, I doubt she would, as there were many, many people there. So maybe this is a non-issue. What would you do? There has never been a more British email than this. Even after I heard the word Ambos, this takes the British scorn. Okay, I know that you guys don't like to mention things to each other. And perhaps you live in a small town where it would be more appropriate. Like, I think if you've moved to a whole new place or it's a really big metropolis and it wouldn't be likely that you'd know each other, it might be weird. But in a smaller setting, she probably gets this a lot. When there's a tragedy like that, especially with a young person, you would presume that they were well-liked and well-known, and it would affect a lot of the people in a small community. So if it were me, I might not, like, at the start of the year wheel it out during, like, the pantomime. But maybe at a parent-teacher meeting or in a quiet setting, I might be like, and by the way, I really hope that I'm not out of line mentioning this, but I was so moved by the speech you gave at your brother's funeral. You stood out to me then as, like, such a wonderful, beautiful orator. And I'm so pleased that you're my son's teacher, because I could tell then, like, what a passionate and compassionate, clever person you are. And I have to tell you how much I really did like your brother too. And I'm so sorry for your loss and what your family went to. Like, I think if you are sincere, it's never bad. If you're careful and considerate and sincere, she would like to hear about it. And I know people who have lost loved ones and loved ones. And in Britain especially, what they struggle with is the not mentioning of it. A friend of mine lost his son, and he's like, I love when people mention it. And I love talking about it, because then the thoughts are out in front of me and not in my head. Because even when I don't talk about it, I think about my son all day, every day. And I can't believe that people aren't talking about my son, because it's this crazy thing that happened in this whole, you know, like, he loves to talk about it. And he likes when people talk about it. Because whether you bring it up or not, she's thinking about her brother too. So correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I always think, bring it up. Catherine, I dislike my partner's absent parents, but should he keep trying? My partner is the eldest of three, raised in a strict denomination of Christianity. He got himself out of the religion as a teen and got his younger siblings out too. This religion encourages shunning, but thankfully his parents, although disappointed, have not shunned their children for leaving. However, they're very cold and distant with their now adult children, all in their 40s. They pretend to take interest in their grandchildren by asking for updates the odd time on the phone, but that's it. They don't call on holidays because Christmas and birthdays are pagan. They make excuses as to why they can't meet up, and apparently they become even worse with my partner when he separated from his wife a few years back because they don't believe in divorce. They aren't keen on meeting me, and to be frank, I'm not so keen on meeting them either. The parents are in their 70s and not in very good health at all. I feel like life is short and they could be gone soon. So should my partner confront them and plead with them to get the relationship going again? Or is this a lost cause? I think you might be assigning a lot of their behavior to this denomination of Christianity, but some of it is just how families behave. Like, some people are just distant and some elderly people just don't have, you know what it reminds me of? The movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Those parents were just, white toast family, as the Greek family called them. And in the Greek family, they were always having huge gatherings. They had loads of cousins and they were loud and they were making food. And to that family, Aiden, whatever his name was in the movie, but you know what I mean, Aiden from Sex and the City, who played the Nia Marskopoulos' husband in the movie, his family were just like, meh, hey, and they didn't have this close, vibrant relationship. I think that you have to love people for who they are. And it's great that they didn't shun their children. And it's fine that they don't ask for updates. Like, I would just learn to be like, great, these people aren't around a lot and I don't have to deal with them and they're not imposing their judgment. Like, can you imagine the flip side if they were like, your children should be doing this and I need to have the children with me and take them to church 3 times a week? Like, you wouldn't want them heavily in your business. It is what it is, you know, and your husband communicates with his parents. I feel like that's enough. I wouldn't push it too much. I'd just be like, do you feel, babe, that there's any unsettled business with your parents? Have you accepted their distant behavior? Because presumably that's been them their whole lives. You know, you haven't really said whether your partner has an issue with this. They do call. They are in contact. He could go visit them, but I certainly don't think that a confrontation is in order and plead with them to get their relationship going again. I mean, that's going to be awkward at this point. You might kill them doing that. They're already on their last legs by the sounds of things. Just pleasantries. Like, they're probably totally satisfied with the relationship. So I would just be mindful of your husband and, like, feel it out what he's going through with his parents. And if he feels satisfied, then there's no problem to solve. Oh, Joanne briefed me on this. I've talked about gaining weight and losing weight and being fat and then being thin again. And a lot of people have written in pissed off about that. And here's one of, oh no, this isn't a letter. This is just Joanne's summary. Fat is not a choice. Catherine, many listeners have written in saying that your comment on choosing to be fat or thin is hurtful, as some do not have the choice and can't lose the weight. I totally get that. I think what I was referring to is, like, some people don't mind. Like, I don't think you should always assign negativity to being fuller figured. I totally understand that there are people who are not happy in their own bodies and they have a hormonal imbalance or they have other issues that cause them to be a size that they don't embrace and they don't feel reflects them. And that was my position when I was pregnant with Fred and I had to take steroids. I don't have a problem with the idea, the concept of being fuller figured. I love it. I think it looks beautiful on some people. I celebrate that people feel beautiful in their own skin. And I think that's what I was trying to get across, is that it was bad for me, just like it's bad for you people writing in. But for some people, it's not a bad thing. So I don't think we should be negative about it all the time. Some people are predisposed to be a certain size and they're comfortable that way and they love it and they're active and they dance and they have no health issues and they're happy and they're beautiful. And some people would love to have bigger thighs or a more shapely figure, and they can't put on weight. And I totally understand that it's not a choice for everyone. And it wasn't even a choice for me. I was big, and then not, like, as soon as I stopped breastfeeding, I got small. It was a choice for me not to get pregnant. I don't know exactly what I said, but I mean, if you're offended by anything that I say, like, just know that I am pure of heart and I did not mean to offend you. And like, I know that loads of people are going through different things and you are not always going to feel represented by everything that I say. I'm sorry for that, but I wish you the best. Catherine, does TikTok think I'm gay? I mean, TikTok, I think that TikTok is just collecting data about Western faces and preferences and mannerisms, and it's all AI food, and soon it's going to turn against us. Catherine, I'm in my early 40s, so being a lesbian wasn't really a possibility in my youth. And by that, I mean it just wasn't seen or spoken about, so it wouldn't have ever occurred to me that I'd be anything but straight. My TikTok algorithms seem to have led me down a constant wormhole of lesbian influencers, constantly joking about the ways in which seemingly straight women don't realize they're gay. Am I the only one getting these videos? Is it due to my age and the lack of people coming out? Or has TikTok singled me out to reveal something to which I am completely ignorant? Can TikTok think you're gay? Yes. TikTok can. TikTok makes assumptions about people all the time. TikTok thinks that I constantly want to see about like true crime and sick kids. And TikTok has got that very fucking wrong. Let me read this. Does TikTok, I'm going to Google it for you and see, like, something should surely pop up on Reddit. You won't be alone. Ooh, it says, check out Alayna Joy, A-L-A-Y-N-A Joy on YouTube. That's exactly what happened to her this year. She was engaged to a man she'd been with for 10 years and broke it off in March because a combination of TikTok and quarantine self-reflection made her realize she was gay and not bi, which was kind of her whole brand before. I thought I was bi for most of my life, but it wasn't until I started watching lesbian TikToks that I began to question it. It definitely had something to do with seeing what it could be like to see the representation and that it's normal and great and okay. And here's an article from USA Today. Sarah Kelly was getting a divorce from her husband, a COVID divorce, as it were, and resigned herself to the idea of spinsterly existence. But a year later, tired of that, she began mulling over her future. She simultaneously downloaded TikTok. What, rather who, started to crowd her feed? Lesbians. Did that mean, could it be, that Kelly was actually a lesbian too? Yes. Seeing people who came out later in life and that narrative was a possibility also really helped me to feel more comfortable in this space, says the 39-year-old. Social media apps like TikTok use algorithms to determine the content they show you, and some users say the results clued them in on the fact that they were queer before they realized it themselves. Experts say it's not like these platforms can actually tell you you're LGBTQAI+, but they evidently could awaken what you've been missing. Platforms like TikTok pick up on your passive behaviors, like the amount of time you stay on a video before scrolling onward, to optimize content they think you'd be interested in. Therefore, someone who doesn't know they're LGBTQAI+, but unconsciously spends more time viewing queer and queer-adjacent content could be tagged as queer without actively engaging in queer content. Does our sexuality impact which social media content we want to view? Sure, it's also possible that the viewing patterns of people who are still trying to determine their sexuality will have certain commonalities that an algorithm could exploit. Sure, but the algorithm still wouldn't know that you're gay or straight or anything else. Kelly quickly found a girlfriend and feels more aligned with herself. Actually, being with a woman emotionally and physically intimately with a woman has made it very clear that this is something that was missing from my life before. Well, that is great. There we go. Balance on today's episode. Queer TikTok doing the work that Christianity, denominative parents, whatever, have undone for decades and generations. That's so interesting. It doesn't surprise me at all. Like, listen, we are not placing enough gravitas on what these algorithms are capable of. I'm sure that there's a way that TikTok knows, like, even where your eyes go in an image. Like, I've done marketing campaigns where they go, oh yeah, their eye went to this color, their eye went to that side of the screen. And like, maybe all that technology is not directly on your phone, but it probably is. Your phone has a camera. Your phone knows like little milliseconds of choices that you make, what you watch, how long you watch it for, what you do next after you watch it. Were you maybe watching a Jan Arden video and then immediately went and bought a flannel shirt online? Are you watching a lot of TikToks about tattoo sleeves? I don't know. Please let us know if you find out you're gay. We would love to hear from you either way. And if you have any questions, any comments, any letters you want to send me, please send them to tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com. If you haven't seen my new series, Parental Guidance, it is streaming now for free on UK TV Play. Please look after each other. I'll see you next week.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.